Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us only sky. Imagine all the people living for today.
Welcome. My name is Anne Wilson, and I'm delighted to welcome you to Emerge Australia's 2025 podcast series, in which I speak to a range of individuals, patients, clinicians, researchers impacted by and associated with ME/CFS and long COVID. I acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we meet and pay my respects to elders past, present, those emerging, and any First Nations people listening to this podcast. We are once again using the magnificent lyrics of John Lennon's Imagine. Timeless lyrics and music in which we are transformed to a place where we dare to imagine a world where there is no greed or hunger, no war, where we have a brotherhood of man, maybe a world without discrimination or stigma, a world where there is a cure for ME/CFS, where the voices of those suffering invisibly are listened to, seen, and heard, where we imagine all the people. So today, I'm really pleased to introduce you to Barry, also known as Baz. Baz first contacted me several weeks ago and sent me his story that outlined a complex journey he's gone through with long COVID and ME/CFS. After speaking to Baz, I felt it may be a story our listeners would be interested in hearing, so I asked him to share it with you. So here he is. Welcome, Baz, and thanks so much for agreeing to talk to me on our podcast series.
Oh, yeah, it's been great. Great. Thank you for the opportunity.
That's a pleasure. So, just to kick this discussion off, can you take us through, you know, your story and why, what made you contact us?
I think it's important for people to understand the relationship that hospitals, the medical professions, and everything else have in relationship to receiving care. It's also understanding that there's much more to it than just the care that you receive at the hospital, but also the care that you receive from your family and friends.
Okay.
And also what you can bring to it yourself and how you measure yourself against all of the conflicting things that are going on at the same time.
And does that also have to do in part with what you can do for yourself?
Yes, it does. And it's understanding that, you know, for some people, walking to the letterbox is a very tiring thing, and walking 100 miles could be just a brisk walk for somebody else.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're actually describing post-exertional malaise if you're talking about the letterbox. And, of course, so many people, well, it's a defining symptom of ME/CFS. Okay, take us through your story.
So, unfortunately, my son brought COVID home with him, which then he passed on to me after a week of about caring for my son.
When was that, Barry? Sorry, I'll interrupt you. When was that?
I can give you the exact dates. Hold
no,
on.
No, not exact date. Was it 24, 23?
Yeah, it was approximately 2 years ago.
Right, okay.
So it's been quite a long, arduous journey, to say the least. I spent, so my son went my son left my care, and then that's when things started to really unravel. So I don't know if I was in that caregiver mode. So I didn't put myself first, and I put my son first, which is what most parents do.
Yeah, of course.
So from that moment on, that's when the wheels really started to fall off. I was admitted for one night stay in Casey Hospital.
So hang on a
So
minute. We've jumped. Can we go back? So your son brought COVID home.
yeah, from school.
What happened to you to land you in hospital?
I caught COVID from him.
Right. And was it, was it a bad case of COVID? It sounds like it might have been because you said you landed in hospital. Can you just
Yeah,
we
once I
don't
was actually going through it, and this is something that you don't realize, is that it didn't seem that all that bad to myself.
Right.
Because I was just living through it, and interestingly enough, even once I look back through it retrospectively, neither did the hospitals or the care staff or anything else as it progressed, because
Right.
I was actually ahead of the research at that time. So once I retrospectively look back on it, the research didn't match the criteria that I was presenting.
Right.
Now it does.
So what you're saying is, just to paraphrase what you're saying, is that you went to hospital with a set of symptoms that they didn't easily recognize as being COVID.
Yes, even though I had tested positive for COVID, and I had RAT tests, and I showed them that for the first visit, it was like so I was having seizures and fits,
Right.
so they didn't recognize that as part of it once I was at the first hospital.
Right.
Later on, once I then got dispatched, I then had a I had already made a hospital doctor's appointment, virtual reality appointment, like what we're doing now.
Yeah.
And they said that they might have to see somebody hands-on. So I actually booked in for the next day to go to a respiratory clinic because that was the only place that would see me hands-on that was local to me. Unfortunately, I didn't make it. Because later on during that day, I was speaking to my partner and I passed out on the phone. We was doing a visual link. I passed out on the phone and then went into fits. So she rang the ambulance. In the meantime, because I had hung up and she didn't know what was going on, I had actually spoken to the coronavirus hotline.
Right.
So, and then because I was passing in and out with them, I've managed to spit out my address, which then caused the police to do a welfare check.
Right.
So
So
the police turned up first with the welfare check, burst into my house. It's the first time in years I'd left my front door open, which I'm really glad about, or else they'd have broken it down.
yes, that's right. I read that in your story. So, can we fast forward a little bit because the people listening to this with long COVID or ME/CFS will be interested in seeing how this has progressed and evolved.
Yeah, so from that, while I was on the ward, it was quite an interesting time.
So, you were admitted to hospital.
I was admitted to hospital. I sat in a tent outside for hours. I had hallucinations. It felt like I was in a big lung, but I was under constant paramedic care.
So this
Now,
was what we need to do is just let's set the scene because some of our listeners will be saying what's being discussed here. So if we go back to those horrible times when COVID was really rampant, our hospitals set up makeshift wards for people who came to hospital with COVID symptoms and had COVID. So when you say that you were in a tent, that's what you're referring to?
Yes, that is correct. And it was a makeshift. It was like a halfway house. I was neither admitted to hospital because they hadn't actually admitted me, and the paramedics would have stayed there for most of the morning. And
Wow.
This is another reason why, if you go back through the times of the pandemic, the ambulance services were so stretched because the hospitals were so full.
Yes, they had to stay with their patients.
Yeah. So it was interesting.
It was, you know, a really, it was a pandemic. It was emergency times, and those times called for pretty emergency type measures out of our health system.
Yeah, and I can remember the most interesting thing about the whole of that side of things was actually there was an armed forces gentleman there that was also with me during that time. So he was obviously stepping up because of the pandemic as well.
Yeah, and we do recall that that did occur, that reinforcements were called in at the time by government to help hospitals. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, it is.
Sorry, I cut you off there.
No, carry on.
I was going to say, can you do a little bit of a fast track to whether you were ever diagnosed with long COVID and...
So during my 9 nights in ICU and everything else that transpired, the one thing that they did come back and diagnose me with, and it was due to the beautiful nurses that was on the ward, they came back and they there was a speech problem. So, and this speech problem wasn't evident once the speech pathologist was there, but the nurses reported it as a symptom. So, and it was it that, that was one of the key moments that turned my recovery around.
Wow. In what way?
Because from that one point of moment, from those nurses being able to put me on the community outreach programs, which then enabled me to access aftercare supports. So I lived the service gap for about 6 to 9 weeks, where I was waiting for the services from once I left the hospital to the other services kicking in. Because without that diagnosis of the speech pathology, I wouldn't have been able to access the other health services that was afforded to me.
Right.
So I had access to neuropsychologists, I had access to exercise physiologists, I've had access to speech pathology. I think I saw an occupational therapist at one stage. It all gets a bit blurry because there were so many reasons for me to keep on going to outreach or outpatients.
And was it a long COVID clinic that you went to, or a COVID clinic?
No, but what came about through the conversation with it is that so shortly after leaving hospital, my partner, she's been a confirmed diagnosis of ME/CFS. And through that, I was supporting my partner and going to appointments with her specialist. So after a short period of time, I went back in and saw the same specialist who knew me, because he saw me supporting my partner. And then he just went, and I was fortunate. And it is one of those things where it's those sliding door moments in life where, because I was supporting my partner and he understood me to see me before and after, he just basically said, "You've got long COVID," because he knew me pre-infection and post-infection.
Right.
And they were totally different people.
In what way were you different, Barry? Describe what
long like you know like one of, one of the examples that we've already talked about is that like that post-exercise malaise. My partner, because I was off for work, organized the plumbers to come out to replace the taps in the house. So I opened up the door saying, don't worry, if I fall asleep, it's not a problem, just carry on. So they replaced all the taps throughout the whole of the house with clanking big spanners and everything else and closed the door and I was asleep on the couch. You know, and I used to walk, because of the encephalitis on the brain, I used to walk into, I can remember walking around Southland Shopping Centre and not being able to track people. So I used to randomly walk into people because my brain couldn't work out where they were walking.
Is that so like sort of severe brain fog that you couldn't?
Yeah. And I also looked at things and my brain would think that the room was slanting. So I used to walk to one side for no apparent reason. I found it very confusing to, and sometimes it used to take, you know, 15-minute shopping trip used to take 45 minutes because I had to sit down so often.
But that's actually, you know, there will be a lot of listeners who would say, we can't even do a 15-minute shopping trip, let alone.
Yeah, so I was very,
don't have those energy levels.
Yeah, and one of the things that came out of it was because of my pre-COVID exercising was actually caused, which they recommended that actually caused my, enabled my recovery. So I was very fortunate from that point of view that my high activity level and my low heart rate kept a lot of the symptoms at bay.
You know, it's interesting you should say that, Barry, because for most people, there are a lot of people who've got ME/CFS, quite severe ME/CFS, who have been athletes. They've been, you know, as fit as fiddles, you know, young people, strong, etc. And for them, their fitness, you know, didn't stop them from having hugely debilitating ME/CFS. So what do you think was a bit different about you, particularly given that your disease was triggered by COVID? Do you think that's meant that it wasn't as severe as other people might get with either long COVID or ME/CFS?
Yeah, and from the feedback from what was said from the exercise physiologist, that was what he said to me. He said, you're just one of the lucky ones. But not only that, I was lucky from the case, and I think this is another case in point, and I highlighted this earlier on with the speech pathologist, because I was getting treatment for other things that was causing the fatigue as well. So,
what were those things, Barry?
Vertigo and not being able to walk in rooms and stuff like that, that is all part of the fatigue. It's like somebody, the best way to describe it is that somebody that needs to wear glasses that doesn't, they can strain their eyes and become more tired.
So you were given some treatment for vertigo, is that right?
Yeah, so there was vertigo, there was, I was put on medication for it as well. There was a multi attack for it. One of the most strangest things that happened post release, though, and it's something that I still hold on to now, and I'm still a bit frightened though. I'm supposed to, I'm a bit traumatized by it. I couldn't work out how to use a self-service checkout. That was one of the most interesting ones.
So it just was a blur. You couldn't do it.
Just couldn't do it. I just couldn't work it out. It was just too complicated. I actually had to press for assistance.
And can you do it now?
Yes. 100%. So it's quite an interesting, you know, people talk about journeys and recoveries. I'm still apprehensive about going through the self-service checkout, I'll be honest with you. But however, I will do it. But I'll prefer to talk to a real person.
Yeah. So Would you count yourself as being fully recovered, or do you still suffer from fatigue that isn't, relieved by having a good rest, etc.?
Sometimes I feel more tired than others. I do think that it does fatigue me quicker. But most of the time, if I get a good night's sleep, I can normally get over it. But sometimes it does linger. So I believe that there could still be something lingering around, but I don't think it's manageable, and I'm managing it myself. So.
Right. Can I ask you about your mood while you were unwell? As in, did you feel that, you were isolated, or
Yeah, that,
were
I think that
you
was the, I can remember going to functions with people and various other things after I'd come out and stuff, and it just felt strange. I just felt I could sit in a crowd and still be alone.
Would you classify that as having felt a bit depressed, or?
Yeah, and I think that definitely played a part of it. That was definitely a. Because it's hard to compute what's going on, and even now I only have flashes of what happened.
Yeah.
I can't honestly remember and tell you a whole story because I don't even know it myself.
Yeah. Well,
I don't.
it's pretty sudden. It sounds to me as though you had this really sudden onset of COVID, followed by some pretty major neurological disturbances that meant that you had fits, and then you started having, when you got a bit better, the vertigo, etc. So you had quite a lot of things sort of one on top of each other. Is that correct to say?
Yeah, and you say it's one on top of the other, but they were probably all concurrent as well.
But yeah.
So there were
Big
the
assault on your body.
yeah, and the strangest thing was that I could lose track of conversation. So if I was sat here now with you as an example, I would bring up something from my past that I was trying to bring into the present, but I wouldn't be able to do it, or I'd get confused and I'd lose track of somebody else was talking. One of the classic examples is, I suppose it's, I don't know if you understand, like with deafness and stuff, sometimes the hearing aids focus you onto a point. And that was how my brain was doing it. So I was okay while you was looking at me, but if I was kept on switching my head around or I'm trying to follow conversations, it just all jumbled messes.
Yeah. So you sort
So,
of like had some disturbances, auditory, sensory disturbances that made comprehension
yeah, and
difficult,
what's good,
complex for you.
yeah, and also once I went through the neuropsych side of things, that was very much at the end of it, or out of the end of the process. But they said to me, once you caught yourself and you slowed down, you've done it much better. Well, I said, yeah, but also I said I could feel the fatigue and the fog coming on, so I stopped myself. So it's
Right.
that realization that you've pushed yourself too hard, or you've done the task repetitively so many times that you have to catch yourself and then re-energize.
Yeah.
So.
I'm interested in that, and I'm wondering if you can explain to our listeners as a patient what your neuropsych work was about, because there's a lot of sensitivity about any work that is deemed to be psychological, neuropsychological.
Yeah,
You seem to find that as a help, and I'm interested to explore that with you a bit more.
because I could feel like I said to you, I could feel the brain fog coming on. So, one of the things that I had noticed through the process is that they give you shapes and patterns to move. And those shapes and patterns, it was okay at the start of it all, but in the middle of it all, if I stopped and paused and refocused myself once I felt the fog coming on, and it was like a fog, I then could then carry on and proceeding to complete the tasks. So it was that moment that you catch yourself. So I go back to the post-exercise malaise. It's very similar process. You've got to learn how to catch yourself. So if today you feel like walking to the letterbox and tomorrow you only feel like walking to the fridge, well, so be it.
Yeah. And that, so that was my next question, going to be my next question. And that was, how important has it been for you to plan your activities so that you get the rest that you need to have the energy to do what you need to do?
Well, you know, the only way that I was lucky, I was fortunate, and one of the reasons why I was very fortunate as well, again, is that I worked casually, so I could pick and take my shifts, so I wasn't forced into a 9-to-5 job. And also I had very understanding clients that had potentially been through something very similar themselves. So, you know, it's that shared lived experience. So I was fortunate enough to have understanding clients, and working casually meant that if I didn't feel like it, there wasn't so much drama if I didn't turn up. But however, there was a drama that was caused, you know, and they've changed the rules and the regulations now for casual employment. So because I hadn't applied for, you get 10-day sick leave a year or something if you're casual, but they've actually, but because I applied for it afterwards, after my illness, once I needed it, I couldn't take it. I couldn't claim it. So I didn't get no financial assistance from the government.
Yeah.
But yeah. Now they've changed those regulations because they've obviously come across these situations before.
I think there are many people in who've been in a similar situation, not identical, but a similar situation. So let's fast forward right now. How are you today? What does life look like for you today compared to 2 years ago?
Oh, I'm working. I'm quite lucky that I work. I work basically near on every day. I take the dog out for a walk. I still have to be a bit careful. Sometimes it does, and I'll be honest with you, compared to what I was to compared to how I now, the recovery is the longest point. So if I went out and worked in the garden now, I would have burnt too many matches, and I'd probably spend a lot more time sitting around compared to 3 years ago. Right. And I don't think it's an age thing. I think it's possibly the side effects of this hanging around. So I have gone out and done bike rides with my son. I've done out and gone out and taken the dog for a walk. I can live a most I can live a very good life. I'm renovating my house, you know, so life is good from that point of view, but it all stems back, and I still honestly believe this, and it stems back all the way back through to that one moment, and that, well, two moments. One, getting an early diagnosis, and one with my speech. Because without that, I wouldn't have been able to access the other free services that the hospital had.
Yeah.
So, you know, yes, it was painful because I had to juggle work and going to the hospital, but it was still much cheaper than trying to pay for somebody to unravel me.
So, Barry, in conclusion, what are some messages of hope that you can provide to people who probably have, you know, unrelenting ME/CFS and long COVID, so they may not be doing as well as you're doing, and you know, the evidence says that less than 10% of people return to normal functioning. What are your words of hope for those people who haven't come out of all of this as well as you have?
I would say that you have to respect the process, and it is a process. And for some people, that process will be 5 minutes, others it will be 15 minutes, and others it could be 5 years. But it is a process, and the biggest thing that I can tell you, if I can take away anything from all this, is it's the biggest journey is understanding yourself. Because only once you know your limits can you push those limits. And at what cost is going to be happening the next day?
Yeah, absolutely. Barry, your story has been an unusual story for ones that we publish, but I believe that it's an important one because it demonstrates the diversity, not only of individuals, but of symptoms that people have that they sort of fall into because, you know, it's a consequence of a disease like COVID. And all of a sudden are plummeted into a world where you can't function the way you used to. But for you, you've been able to come out of it. As you say, getting to understand yourself and your own body and accepting that this journey may be a long journey is something that everybody experiencing ME/CFS and long COVID has to work through themselves or with the help of an organization like Emerge Australia. Were there specific people while you were on your journey who you felt were a great help to you?
I think, and I've spent a lot of time thinking about this. One of my greatest was my partner. Having that family support around you was absolutely fantastic. And, you know, and as cliche as it sounds, you know, ME/CFS actually led to my results, because without my partner there giving me the diagnosis of long COVID through her specialist and everything else, I don't think it would have happened, because I wouldn't have had that medical expertise that understood the symptoms and accessing them straight away near on was the vital key for it.
Well, there's no doubt that I won't say early diagnosis because that's very difficult, but I will say diagnosis. So being diagnosed by a GP as having ME/CFS is one of the biggest issues that our people face. Not being able to find a doctor who knows enough about ME/CFS to diagnose the patients, having doctors gaslighting our patients.
I went through that. Interesting that you bring that up, sorry to interrupt, but I went through that all the way through my hospital stay. The one thing that they said, because I was ahead of the curveball, and the one thing that they could do is that they always blame you if they can't find a solution.
Yeah, well, we know about that, don't we?
So, you know, interestingly enough, once I spoke to my partner afterwards, it looked like they had ransacked my house looking for drugs or alcohol, because they were trying to look for a reason why I was in such a state.
Really? Who would do such a thing?
Well, that's her words, not mine. So oh, right. I don't know if it was the police, because the police was obviously present in my house, but they didn't take me away, or if it was just me leaving a mess after looking after myself and my child. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that was one of the things that I learned throughout the whole of the process, like throughout my hospital stays and moments of moments of clarity that they asked me was, have you been drinking? Have you taken drugs? Even though the toxicology reports come back clean. Do you know what I mean? There was like, you've already tested me.
The situation that you brought this on yourself.
Self, yeah. And even, like, I can remember in a moment of clarity that I had, they said, have you been drinking? I said, I don't even have a pair of shoes. You pulled me out of my bed. You pulled me out of my bed forcefully, put Tracky Dacks and a T-shirt on, and grabbed my phone. what you see I've got is what I've got. So I don't know where I'm even going to.
Yeah.
I don't understand where the questioning was coming based on what they could see.
Yeah. And, there will be a lot of people listening who identify, maybe not to that type of situation, but certainly identify to not being believed. And that's a tragedy, and that's something that at Emerge Australia we're absolutely trying to address through clinical education of GPs. Barry, I just want to thank you for being my guest today and telling your story. I do hope that our listeners have found it helpful, and that's just providing everyone with another perspective on a slightly different case that has all the elements that so many people, both with long COVID and ME/CFS, go through. So thank you, Barry. Appreciate you talking to me.
No worries. Thanks a lot, Anne. Thanks for having me.
Today's podcast is part of an Emerge Australia series that records interviews with patients and people of influence to ensure that the voices of those with ME/CFS and long COVID are seen and heard. This is a platform where we can together explore the pressing issues faced by over 250,000 people with ME/CFS and at least 400,000 more with long COVID. Tune in again for our next interview. And don't forget, for more information and to subscribe to the Emerge Australia newsletter, visit our website on www.emerge.org.au. Thank you again, Barry, and bye for now.
You may say that I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. And I hope someday you'll join us, and the world will live as one.